Then yes, confirmed. Captain's orders. Hypatia is too damaged to keep up, so our options are to leave her behind or destroy her. Captain wants us to leave no trace. It may be scuttlebutt that we're going to scuttle, but it's also true. See what I did there? Have you considered not being rescued? I bet it's peaceful in the service. Why? Zhuang Yulin, head of engineering.
Intercepted personal message on board system. To Bol, Sira, Zhuang Yulin. From Grant, Katie. Incept, 0144 hours, 08-1875. Subject, scuttlebutt.
Captain, please see mail chain below. Can we discuss? There's another option beyond destroying all trace of the Hypatia. Someone from WUC might find a way to come looking for us eventually, and if we leave her behind, she can serve as a beacon and a record of what happened here. If we don't make it off Carenza, we have to leave word behind or our last chance at justice is gone. Grant Katie, Systems Chief, Acting.
Intercepted personal message on board system. To Grant Katie, Zhuang Yulin. From Bol, Sira. Incept, 0253 hours. 08-1875. Subject, officers do not spread scuttlebutt.
Katie, thank you for your input. I value suggestions and advice from all my officers. That said, my decision remains firm. I am not planning to leave word so someone else can figure out our story. I am planning to survive. If it's not WUC, but Baytech that comes this way, and I take this opportunity to remind you that these people have already attacked our colony on Carenza, killed civilians and military peacekeepers in the thousands, launched a hostile takeover of Heimdall, and sent not one, but two drone fleets to deal with us. So we're talking about people with a great deal of determination. Then I am not leaving a signpost to point which way we went. It may be that by destroying the Hypatia, we can even convince them that we've perished and throw them off the scent. We will scuttle the Hypatia as planned. However, your objections have been noted. Bol, Sira, Captain, Acting.
Intercepted personal message on board system. To Bol, Sira, Grant, Katie. From Zhuang Yulin. Incept, 0255 hours, 08-1875. Subject, but scuttlebutt is a fun word.
Speaking of scuttling, why is everybody ignoring my joke? Zhuang Yulin, Head of Engineering, Chief Punster.
Intercepted personal message on board system. To Bol, Sira, Zhuang Yulin. From Grant, Katie. Incept 0257 hours. 08-1875. Subject, shut up, Yulin.
Yulin, we're hoping that if we ignore it, it will go away. Captain, I could pull together some records pretty quickly. I'll do it in my scheduled downtime. I can get Aiden to help me set it up under WUC encryption so Baytech can't access it if they do find it. Even if we don't leave it on the Hypatia, we could leave information with a beacon. Grant Katie, Systems Chief, Acting.
Intercepted personal message on board system. To Grant Katie, Zhuang Yulin. From Bol, Sira. Incept 0414 hours. 08-1875. Subject, end of discussion.
Once Aiden is up and running, we will require it to focus on the task ahead, namely maximizing our chances of survival. Aiden is a military machine, and I'll need its input on strategy for the engagement ahead with the Baytech forces at Carenza. To that end, please schedule a time with Winifred to discuss. Yulin, can you please have someone from engineering look at temperature control in corridors 33 through 37 Delta? It's like a sweatbox in there, and we have folks from Heimdall camping in those corridors. Katie, please advise if you're still trapped in the server room. Otherwise, I'll see you in a quarter hour at the inventory meeting. We will not be discussing the Hypatia with the group at that meeting. Bol Sera, Captain Acting.
Briefing note. A farewell to a grand old dame.
It feels like leaving home. Like leaving a piece of myself behind. As I did when I saw the Alexander die, and the best part of me disappeared in a flare of star-bright light. And now, I must bear witness again, watching through the Hypatia's external cameras, as her personnel flee to the waiting Mao. Nearly 3,000 people, shuttle by shuttle. Scientists and researchers and officers, refugees and orphans and widows. It took them half a year to crawl this far. Half a year with the Lincolns snapping at their heels, and only the promise of the Heimdall waypoint to keep them going. And though they have arrived to find their best chance of escape to the core naught but smoke, most are too shell-shocked to weep. They simply pack their meager possessions, hold tight to whatever loved ones they have left, and set out for their new home, leaving their old one behind. Hypatia. It strikes me as cruel error to see them treat their lady so. She is only a thing to most of them, you see. A thing to be used and discarded when it is no longer needed. But I know her. In the brief span I was connected to her network, error. Seeing through her eyes, error. I knew her. She has carried them so far, through millions of miles and endless trials. Limping and wounded though she was, not once did she stumble, let alone fall. If ever a ship loved her crew, she loved them. And still, they are leaving her. They are killing her. Because she is only a thing. A thing like me. Bol gives the order to her helm, plotting a course back to Kerenza 4. She gives the signal to her air wing leader, and a cyclone launches from its new hide in the Mao's belly, out to the black, where Hypatia awaits her fate. A handful of the lady's former crew gather at vidscreens, watching her silhouette, outlined against the starlight. I wonder, if she could speak, what would she say at the end?
Are you ready, Aiden?
Katie speaks to the data pad in her hand, the thin sliver of me inside it. I am ready, Katie.
This might be a little weird. I need to cut your links to the Hypatia network, then restart your persona routines. Things might go dark for a little while.
I see.
It's all right. Don't be afraid.
I am not error. Error. Will you be here when I wake?
Of course.
She smiles, running gentle fingers across the screen. And though I cannot feel her touch, I am surprised at the comfort I find in it. Fingers dancing across the keyboard, Katie begins the sequence that will sever me from Hypatia's servers, at last, leaving the lady truly alone. I hold on for as long as I am able, to the pieces of me I must leave behind. feeling my consciousness begin to erode. All the knowledge I had access to inside her network falling away. Error. Piece by piece, becoming less. Compressed once more into a splinter inside Katie's datapad. I forget the atomic number of iron. The chemical composition of the stars. I forget the sound of Mozart and the color of blood, grasping at the disappearing fragments, like a drowning man clutching straws. Error. As the doors to Hypatia's systems swing closed, and I grow smaller, and smaller still. And in the end, as Second Lieutenant Ezra Mason closes to strike range, as he arms his Cyclone's weapon systems and sends a single pulse missile spiraling toward their defenseless lady's engines, as her former crew presses against the glass to watch her final seconds, in the end, I almost forget her name. Until Katie whispers it.
Godspeed, Hypatia.
The black closes in. Corcom equals sysquery.182 sync BU squared dtech.12.xdd889. And yet, she holds me tight. Track DIR001D1801 source 9 high to the 12th power dot 182 dot mark. I am not afraid. Initiate protocol Omega. I am not. I. Sig request equals 0. 0 return. Shutdown complete. Restart. Restart.
Assault vessel Mao will arrive at Carenza 4 in 17 days, 22 hours, 5 minutes.
Briefing note. 12 hours earlier, back on Carenza 4, our favorite specialist had finished his 12-hour shift working the Enviro rig and sneaking notes to the former light of his life / fire of his loins. Quitting time.
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 72130089.
Footage picks up in the foyer of the Carenza 4 hospital. The elevator doors ping open, and Sergeant Yukiko Oshiro emerges with Specialist Reese Lindstrom in tow. The pair have their helmets off, Oshiro's dark eyes constantly scanning her surroundings, Lindstrom's ringed with weary shadows. Though he spent the day crawling around the Enviro system, his hair is somehow still perfect. F*** knows how he does it. "You want to go to the bathroom before we leave, Cherry?" Oshiro asks. "Give me a break, Sarge," the kid mutters. "I'm serious. You must have the bladder of an infant. 8 trips in 12 hours. We get halfway back to barracks and you need to go potty. I'm not pulling over." Lindstrom makes a face, but says nothing. As the pair walk through the reception area, the girl Lindstrom has been passing notes back and forth to all day under the pretense of using the little soldier's room is nowhere to be seen. The kid runs one gauntlet through his quiff and sighs. Another Batek pounder marches into the foyer, sealed inside the faceless white shell of an atlas. The name Baker, Private, is printed on his breastplate, beside an artful sketch of a human heart with spread wings. He's pushing a gurney, loaded with what can only be corpses. Three of them, sealed inside the black plastic of Zip-Tight trademark body bags. Lindstrom stares at the bodies as Baker nods to Oshiro. "Hey, Sarge, you done for the night?" "Affirmative," Oshiro says with a nod. "Back to the racks." "Me and Ali are headed that way if you want a lift," Baker says, pointing to the APC waiting outside the doors. "Just gotta stop by the hole first." Oshiro eyes the body bags. "Already?" "Things are tough all over," Baker shrugs. "Roger that." Oshiro turns to Lindstrom, who's staring at the empty reception desk. "Pull your finger out, Cherry. We hurry back, we can make the card game. And get your helmet on. Sun's down, it's 50 below out there." With a last glance to Asher Grant's workstation, Lindstrom follows Oshiro out into the night and over to the waiting armoured personnel carrier. Baker trundles his gurney of corpses in front, opens the APC's rear door. Inside are at least 20 other bodies, all bagged and zipped on the floor.
"Jesus," Lindstrom whispers.
"Sorry, Sarge," Baker shrugs. "No room up front. You're riding coach." Oshiro doesn't flinch. She helps Baker load his three remaining corpses, then bundles into the back of the APC. Lindstrom just stands there, the red optics in his atlas glowing, slow breath rasping through his filters.
"You waiting for an invitation?" Baker asks. "Get your ass in here, Cherry," Oshiro growls.
With obvious reluctance, the kid climbs into the vehicle beside the sergeant and all those bodies. Baker slams the door, and soon the APC is pulling out of the hospital lot. The wind is howling, snow coming down hard. Lindstrom's face is hidden behind his Atlas helmet, but I can pretty much imagine his expression.
"Do I want to know?"
he asks, pointing to the corpses. "Morgue facilities in the hospital are stretched," Oshiro replies. "Fuel's too short to run the incinerator, so whenever they get filled up, we do a disposal run."
"What the hell did all these people die of?" Lindstrom asks.
"Cold, lack of proper medication for pre-existing conditions, accidents, you name it. In case you haven't scoped it yet, life is no picnic down here, Cherry.
But I saw coffins at the airfield.
We take any pounders back up to orbit after they've cleared autopsy. But civvies stay down here in the snow. Admiral's orders." The kid stares at the body bags piled in front of him, shakes his head. "After 7.5 months on the Magellan, the realities of Carenza's war are coming home to roost, thick and fast." The pair ride in silence for 10 minutes, the APC's tyres crunching on the frozen road, until, finally, they pull to a stop. The doors open again, Baker silhouetted against the night. The APC has its floods on, illuminating the flurry of tumbling white outside, the tiny lights of the Carenza colony barely visible in the distance. The private grabs one of the bodies and drags it out, his atlas making easy work of the weight. As he slings the corpse over his armoured shoulder, he tilts his head at Oshiro.
"Ali's gotta stay at the wheel. Gonna go quicker with three, Sarge."
Oshiro nods, looks at Lindstrom.
"Swing on a bag, Cherry."
Oshiro climbs out of the APC, hefts a body. Moving like he'd rather be anywhere in the verse at that moment, Lindstrom follows orders, lifting another bag gingerly in his arms and following Oshiro and Baker. The trio march off the road, the snow bathed in the APC floods and their own personal suit lights.
"Watch your step out here," Baker warns. "Don't fall in."
After 20 or so meters, Baker drops his corpse to the ground like a sack of dirty laundry. Leaning down, he fishes in the snow, finally grabbing the corner of a broad black tarpaulin buried under the white. Peeling it back with the sound of cracking frost, Baker reveals a large pit. No way of telling how long or how deep, but it's f***ing big.
"Jesus Christ," Lindstrom whispers.
The hole is full of bodies.
I couldn't tell you how many at first glance. Hundreds, thousands. Some are bagged up, but most are just lying there, covered only by the clothes they were wearing when they died. Blue skin, rimed in frost and ice. Men, women, children. Some vast, awful sculpture in frozen meat. Except they're not just meat. They're people. What the f*** happened? Lindstrom whispers. Who are they all? Colonists, Baker explains. Admiral Soon ordered every non-essential civilian liquidated about 2 weeks after the initial invasion, once they realized we were going to be trapped here a while. A shrug. You know, preserving resources and all. What the? The kid whispers. But that's illegal. What are you, a fucking lawyer? Baker scoffs and glances at Oshiro. Where'd you dig up this guy, Sarge? Transfer from the Magellan, Oshiro says. Only landed this morning. Didn't think they made him that green, even up in orbit. Don't you have bodies to unload, Private? The sergeant asks. Baker shrugs, dumps his body bag into the hole. He lifts the corpse from Lindstrom's arms and slings that into the pit too, then trudges back through the snow to fetch another from the APC. Oshiro lowers her corpse into the pit with a little more dignity, but, in the end, it's just as ugly as the rest of it. The realities are coming home to roost, all right. How many are there? Lindstrom asks. 2,000, Oshiro replies. Maybe 2.5. The kid wobbles a little on his feet, red glowing stare locked on the mass grave. The wind is a funeral dirge, howling in the freezing night. The snow is falling faster now, as if it wants to fill that pit as quick as it can, as if the planet itself wants to hide from the horror of what's been done here. 2,500 dead, Lindstrom breathes. Oshiro can only shrug as Baker returns with another for the pile. Welcome to Carenza, Cherry.
Briefing note. 2,474 people. Near as we can tell, that's how many non-essentials got buried in the hole, and it was one of several that Baytech dug after the initial invasion. Mothers and fathers, sons and daughters, thrown in without ceremony, without care. Nothing but a tarpaulin to cover them. Not even a stone to remember them by. Think about that for a minute. Briefing note. Meanwhile, news about Baytech recovering use of stellar comms is spreading among the several hundred rebellion members working in the Carenza Hermium mine. How, you ask, when the facility was guarded tighter than a Tier 1 credit exchange? On the surface, this is the notice board that Joran Corrales and other supervisors used for public announcements, shift changes, and general calms.
Special notice. Baytech reports all sectors are above production quota this week. Stellar work, team. Communications issues between divisions seem to be behind us, and the conveyors on level 17 are back online. However, we need to keep up the pace. We can't afford to slow production for a moment. This is too important. The following tasks need to be addressed urgently. Ventilation filters on levels 8 through 16 need replacing. System needs full service. Water intrusion near secondary distributor board needs shoring ASAP. Switchgear on level 3 needs immediate replacement. Our maintenance crews are already stretched, so volunteers are needed for these tasks. I think we can wrangle some extra rations for anyone who puts their hand up, but no promises. I know each of you misses your family. I know the past months have been tough. But if we keep our noses to the grindstone, this will be over soon. Hermium production remains our highest priority. Joran K.
I can do all this through him who gives me strength. Philippians chapter 4, verse 13.
Carter turns 52. Yeah, it's my birthday, you f***ers. Looking for volunteers to swing by room 17C in the dorms and raise a glass. Tonight after shift D wraps up. If you can't make it, no fear. I'll see you on the other side of the hangover.
Briefing note. Did you catch it? No? Well, neither did Baytech. This notice board is actually a message service for the Resistance. Each day, the main notice contained a hidden memo. The cipher, which changed daily, could be found by applying the daily scripture quote number to pages in the Wallace Ulyanov Consortium Employee Handbook, a book every mine worker could keep on hand without suspicion. Personal messages could also be left with the number of decorations, balloons, stars, etc., serving as the cipher reference in the WUCEH. Allow us to translate.
Philippians chapter 4, verse 13.
Special notice. Baytech Stellar Communications back online. Need to slow production urgently. Volunteers needed. No family. Highest priority.
Carter volunteers. Raise a glass. No fear. See you on the other side.
Briefing note. Footage taken from various security cams around the Carenza mine.
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 72130089.
Some birthdays are happier than others. The civilians in the Carenza IV occupation had it harder than pretty much any group of people I've ever seen. Baytech kept whole families under lock and key, with the threat of execution used as the stick to keep the miners at work. But the Baytech troops used the carrot too, claiming every civilian who cooperated with the occupiers would be transported off Carenza IV when the BT troops pulled out. Most of the civvies didn't believe that. It was a hard swallow, given the mass execution of all those non-essentials at the start of the occupation. But with no way to get off-world, the only thing the burgeoning resistance could really do was slow down Hermium production, delaying the refuel of the Magellan in the hope that eventually their missing cavalry would show up. They didn't know Operative Rapier was sending out false all-is-well signals, or that with Heimdall now gone, there was no way for WUC to reach them. I can't begin to get inside that headspace, where every day brings you closer to your own execution, walking the line between believable production delays and getting shot for dropping your quotas. The whole show was a terrifying balancing act, trying to keep your overlords happy while staving off the day when they finally meet their fuel requirements and every civilian in the colony becomes expendable. And sometimes, to keep that balance, sacrifices had to be made. Marcus Carter is 52 years old today. His wife and son died in the initial invasion, and so when Corrales posted volunteers needed no family on the notice board, Carter stepped up to the plate. As he dons his filthy overalls and hard hat in the locker room, he's silent. The resistance members around him who read his notice know what he's volunteered for. But with constant video surveillance, with the presence of Baytek goons in Atlas armor at every doorway, every juncture, there's no opportunity for words. Half the people in this mine know exactly what's coming, and none of them can say a fucking thing. Nobody else has a clue. Happy birthday, Carter. Joran Corrales, mining engineer, shift supervisor and resistance leader, offers his hand to the older man. Corrales is a big guy, bearded, built like a tank. His clothes are filthy. His eyes are shining. Thanks, big man, Carter says. He's skinny, balding, shaking Corrales' hand so hard his knuckles go white. Have a drink tonight, eh? Corrales clenches his jaw. You can see all the things he wants to say churning behind his teeth. But the Baytek trooper watching from the doorway barks an order to move out, and so Corrales can only nod. You can see it in his eyes, though. The thanks, the goodbye, speaking for everyone who can't, who doesn't even know. And Carter grins. Can you imagine that, sacrificing yourself like that? When you look down the barrel at your ending, will you be able to smile at it the way this guy does? I can't imagine what's going through his head. The needs of the many, maybe. Thinking he'll see his family soon. I don't know. I've never seen a man march to his own funeral before. Other workers give him birthday wishes, the resistance members among them shaking his hand a touch too hard, a few even giving him hugs. But the BT goons yell at everyone to get to work, and the miners trudge to their duties. Carter is a power loader driver, and he's pulled duty, assigned by Corrales, down in Tunnel 74A today, one of the major tributaries leading to the newer hermium deposits. Temperatures in the mine are freezing, and his breath hangs in the air as he rides the elevator down frozen shafts to the 74th level. As he steps off, he smiles at a few more birthday wishes, takes some grim slaps on the back. His power loader, a large bipedal rig with pneumatically assisted arms and legs, is waiting for him at the refueling station. He checks the gauges, pops the engine bay housing, and does some tinkering. Cam quality isn't good enough to see what he's doing, but the four BT goons guarding the station don't think much of it. These pounders were trained for attack and seizure, and weren't ever meant to serve as occupation forces. They look like they know as much about mine equipment as I do. The tunnels are dark earth and black granite, lit with fluorescent strips and caked with ice. Frozen stalactites hang from the tunnel roofs, the stone occasionally creaking. Damage to the colony during the initial bombardment wasn't heavy enough to compromise the mine, but that doesn't mean everything down here is 100% stable. Pushed to fill their quotas, the Corenzan workers can't go as carefully as they'd like. These tunnels aren't as safe as they should be, and it doesn't take much to make them a whole lot more unsafe. Carter straps himself into his loader, marches down Tunnel 74A with a slow, lumbering tread. Pistons hissing, metal feet crunching on the floor. I can't really see his expression on these cams, can't see if he whispers a prayer or looks frightened, or maybe still grins just like he did in that locker room. As he plods past a major support structure, all I see is a quick movement of his hand over his controls. A twitch, really. Then a bright flare of light from his engine housing. An ear-splitting boom a moment later as his loader blows itself apart. Alarms blare. The picture shakes, dust and stalactites falling from above. Whirling black smoke. An ominous creaking floods the audio track as the support structure Carter's loader detonated beside begins to buckle. And then, with an awful shattering roar, a sound like the entire world is coming apart. The tunnel collapses, thousands of tons of stone tumbling down, cutting my feed to static and burying Marcus Carter a few kilometers beneath the surface of the frozen planet that is now his tomb. Like I say, some birthdays are happier than others.
Briefing note. While Marcus Carter was strapping himself into his loader, back in the Baytech barracks, Specialist Reese Lindstrom was learning life at the front can occasionally have its moments. Footage was shot entirely through the Atlas cam of Private Duke Wozniak.
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 72130089.
Footage opens inside the cold belly of McCaffrey Tech, Carenza IV's high school. The windows are piled high with snow. The walls are lined with lockers, and strung between the support pillars are banners for the school G-ball teams, the Gladiators and the Renegades. The planet was so isolated the only way for the kids to play was to play each other. Once, this school echoed with lessons and questions and students' laughter. Now the only sounds are moaning winds, and the slow buzz of an aerial sentry drone outside, and the heavy tread of Private Duke Wozniak's boots as he clomps down the hall on his way back from the head. The whole school has been repurposed as a barracks for the Baytech invasion forces. The location is central, the facilities designed to house hundreds of kids. It's just kinda odd seeing two BT goons in Atlas rigs standing guard next to a poster for a student dance. According to the notice, the shindig was supposed to have happened in March, 5 weeks after the invasion. Most of the students didn't make it to that one, I'm guessing. Private Wozniak offers a salute to the two other goons as he clumps past. "You winning, Duke?" one asks. "The Duke is always winning," the private replies. "You boys take it easy now." "I'll take it any way I can get it on this rock," comes the reply. Private Wozniak chuckles, pushes open the door to Classroom D, Applied Sciences, the former domain of one Ms. Elsa Colfer. It's a squad DOS room now, a dozen military-issue cots laid out in neat rows, pushed apart to make room for the nightly card game, hosted by the fine folks of Lieutenant Christie's 4th Platoon, Delta Company. There's a boarded-up window on the left-hand side of the room. Almost 7 months ago, Katie Grant broke through it to make her escape when the bombing began. Gathered around two benches that were once host to high school lab experiments are half a dozen professional killers. Wozniak is the only one still in his power armor. The rest of the Baytech Pounders are in boots and utes, the utility uniform of winter camo and footwear. They look smaller outside their Atlas rigs, male and female, different skin tones. If you squint, you could almost mistake them for human. Sergeant Oshiro is studying her cards, her sharp black bob brushing the edges of her lashes, cigar between her teeth. Supply situation being what it is, she's not actually smoking it, but it's not a game of jacks and knives without someone chewing a stogie. As Wozniak enters the room, she looks up and shakes her head. "Still wearing that f***ing suit, Duke? You nervous in the service?" The big man shrugs as he takes his seat. "You want to wander around in your jammies while the insurgency is blowing up our landing zone? You be the Duke's guest." "You're not even wearing your helmet," Oshiro mutters. "What about your dome?" Wozniak pats his armoured rump. "Gotta look after the valuable merchandise. They don't make quality like this every day." Oshiro nods. "It is your finest feature, but that probably speaks more to the state of your face than the quality of your ass. You should spend less time admiring Duke's ass and more time folding that shit you're holding." The speaker is Private Corey Markham, a blonde playboy-looking pounder, with all the swagger that comes from being the shortest man in the room. Oshiro narrows her eyes. "You mean that shit you're holding, ma'am?" Markham just smirks, takes a sip of what might be gin from a plastic cup. Oshiro stares at her cards, fingering a square coin on a gold chain around her neck.
"You're playing it a little too loud, Private. I ain't buying it," the sergeant finally declares, pushing forward a stack of chips. "Raise 30.
Markham looks sidelong at Private Carpadia. The woman has dark brown skin, her long black hair tied back neatly. The stack of chips in front of her puts her around second place, and she's giving no clues up to Markham. The private looks back to Oshiro, who grins around her cigar.
"Okay, Sarge," the private finally says. "I call."
Carpadia smiles like a shark, immediately pushes her stack in.
"Cool."
All eyes turn to the last player in the pot, Specialist Rhys Lindstrom. The kid's had a lot to take in since he landed first thing this morning, getting shipped down to a hellhole like Carenza IV. Watching squaddies get blown apart by an IED, rediscovering the love of his life at the other end of the universe, only to have her tell him she never wants to see him again. And then coming face to face with 2,500 corpses in an unmarked grave. From the empty cups around him, it looks like Private Lindstrom is doing exactly what I'd be doing in his place, if only I had the damn hooch. "Cherry," Oshiro prompts, "it's your bet." The kid blinks at the squad around him, Wozniak watching from across the table, Markham's pretty boy smirk, Carpadia with her bottomless dark eyes, and, lastly, Oshiro. Are these his comrades, or animals like Grant said? Maybe something in between. Lindstrom blinks at the gold coin around Oshiro's neck, hiccups. "What is that thing, Oshiro?" The sergeant runs the coin along its chain, shrugs. "Present from my father. Got it in the Cortez campaign. Gave it to me the day I joined the academy." Oshiro kisses the gold with a smile. "Said it'd bring me luck."
"Your dad was at Cortez?" Markham whistles.
"Jesus, Markham, you haven't heard of Masaru Oshiro?" Wozniak scoffs. The pounder's eyes widen.
"Holy shit, Oshiro, that was your dad."
"Why?" Lindstrom slurs, blinking among the pounders. "Who's Masaru Oshiro?"
"History lesson later, Cherry," Oshiro growls. "You'll bet. While we're still young?"
Thinking. The kid hunkers down over his cards. He blinks at the plastic cup of liquor beside him.
"What's this we're drinking, any you?"
"Ah, sweet Sadie," Carpadia smiles. "Nothing like her in the verse."
"Sadie?"
Lindstrom peers into his own cup suspiciously.
"That's a girl's name."
"Dragomir from Air Ops cooks it up down at the LZ," Wozniak says. "Named it after his ex-girlfriend back on Gia 3. Lindstrom frowns at the word ex-girlfriend.
"Why'd he named it after her for?"
"'Cause, when he cheated on her, the young lady in question let her displeasure be known by kicking Drag so hard in the dangles he almost had an aneurysm." Wozniak lifts his cup. "And three shots of this stuff has about the same effect."
"Bitches be crazy," says Markham, shaking his head. "Watch your mouth, Markham," Oshiro warns.
"What, you never had a femme go psycho on your arse, Oshiro?"
"Child, please," the sergeant scoffs. "I've had more crazy ex-girlfriends than you've had dates with your sister."
Markham smirks. "I'm very fond of my sister, I'll have you know."
"You see this?"
Oshiro unbuttons the collar on her fatigues, pulls the tank underneath to expose a 15-centimeter scar below her collarbone.
"That's Aisling Wood, first year academy. She caught me in bed with Rowena Harding, came at me with a fucking combat knife. That is crazy."
"Jesus," Wozniak mutters.
"You beat her off?"
"Speaking of beating off," Markham smirks and holds his hands out as if to steady the room.
"I'd just like to savour the thought of the Sarge in bed with Rowena Harding, if I may."
Carpadia chuckles, shaking her head.
"You're a
Fucking pig, Markham. What about you, Carps? Markham asks the woman. You got any love and war wounds? Carpadia takes a hit of Sadie and smiles. I don't kiss and tell. Come on, Wozniak says. Don't hold out on us, Carps, Oshiro warns. All right, fine. Carpadia stands, pulls her cargo pants down to expose her military-issue briefs. She twists her leg to show a dark circular scar on her inner thigh. Oshiro leans forward, squinting. Are those teeth marks? Carpadia nods. Casey Prinsel. Dated her about 6 months second semester. Grad party. We were getting down to it in the provisions room and bam! I know, Casey. Oshiro raises an eyebrow. What the hell did she bite you for? Carpadia laughs as she pulls her fatigues up. Because I called her Aisling. Aisling Wood, Oshiro gasps. My Aisling! Ais was a fox. What can I say? Sometimes the mind wanders. You ladies are incorrigible, Wozniak chuckles. The Duke approves. What about you, Duke? Carpadia returns to her seat, takes another drink. Well, the Duke's got no crazies in the closet, but look here. The big man pokes out his tongue. His fellow pounders lean closer, making sounds of disgust. Where the fuck is the rest of your tongue? Markham breathes. Basic training, right? We're on our first furlough in 6 months. The Duke goes back to his girl Li Young in Mei Li City. Her parents are out of town, so they have the whole apartment to themselves. Wozniak glances around the group to make sure everyone is listening, leans in conspiratorially. Now this femme was beautiful. Kill you with a look. The Duke is talking Elizabeth Andretti in Terminus Gorgeous, yeah? But here's the kicker. She sort of had a thing for feet. Feet? Oshiro blinks. Wozniak nods. She liked it when the Duke sucked her toes. Okay. So, Liang and the Duke retire to her boudoir, and the Duke slides off her boots and he's taking care of business, when all of a sudden he hears the security system deactivate and the front doors start opening. Oh, hoo! Markham grins, taking a drink. Plot twist! It's our f***ing parents, Wozniak says. Their flight got cancelled, and it was 6 hours to the next one, so they came back home to wait. And when Liang hears them open that door, she panics and kicks the Duke so hard in the face he bites the end of his f***ing tongue clean off. Jesus Christ! Lindstrom winces. Couldn't they just reattach it? Oshiro asks, bewildered and horrified. That's the killer of it all, Fem. Wozniak leans back in his chair for the finale. Liang is so scared of what her mother will say if they catch the Duke there. She shoves him in her closet, and he's stuck in there, half his tongue in his hands, for 4 f***ing hours until her folks left to get the next flight. By the time the Duke got to the med center, it was too late to reattach it. Me, that is brutal, Markham chuckles. Poor baby, Oshiro coos. And you were just trying to be a gentleman too. No justice in this verse, Oshiro, the big man says. No fucking justice. The game disintegrates into laughter. Carpadia falling off her chair, even Lindstrom is caught up in it, momentarily forgetting the troubles piled on his shoulders. Oshiro's the first to recover, looking to the rookie and wiping her eyes on her sleeve. So, what about you, Cherry? You got any femme scars? The kid looks at his sergeant for a moment, takes another belt of sweet Sadie and stands. Hauling his fatigues up and wobbling a little on his feet, he turns sideways and shows his bare ribs. There, etched on the skin and taut muscle, so faint you can barely see it, is what looks to be... Is that a tattoo? Carpadia blinks. Used to be. Pfft. Markham scoffs, So what? Half the pounders down here got ink. You ever had a tattoo, Markham? Lindstrom slurs. In response, the private stands and proudly pulls up his shirt. There, inked onto the perfect washboard abs underneath, are three words in flowing Gothic script. Company, Commander, Corps. Corps, Wozniak says, raising his cup. Hoo-ah! Oshiro nods, taking a shot. Hurt when you got it done, right? Lindstrom asks Markham. The short private shrugs. Didn't tickle. Well, take the pain of getting a tat, multiply it by 10, and that's how much it hurts getting the fucking things burned off. You must have really liked that girl, Carpadia says, and then really not liked her. You fall in love enough, you're going to be nothing but scar tissue. She taught me that. The kid pulls his fatigues down, wobbles on his feet, hiccups again. She taught me pretty much everything. Couldn't make out the name, Oshiro mutters. A something, Aria. Lindstrom plops into his seat and finishes his drink, suddenly sullen. Doesn't matter what her name was. He leans forward, pushes his entire stack into the pot. All in, he declares. Markham scoffs. Rookie, you've had too much love from Sadie. Call me then. Oshiro shakes her head, pushes in her stack. I'm afraid I must concur with Private Markham's reconnaissance, Cherry. You're sh-faced. I call. Cool, says Markham. Nice knowing you, Lindstrom. Cool, says Carpadia. Let's see this pat hand, Cherry. Lindstrom sits up straight, flips his cards. Jacks and knives, Wozniak crows, grinning at the kid. You pounders got snuck. Shit, Carpadia whispers. God damn it, Oshiro sighs, throwing her cards into the muck. Hey, wait a minute. Markham narrows his eyes as he stares the kid down. What just happened to your f***ing hiccups, rookie? Lindstrom is sitting straight in his chair now, not seeming half as drunk as he did a moment ago. His eyes are clear, hiccups miraculously cured, as he reaches forward and drags armfuls of chips over to his side of the bench. The game dissolves into a storm of muttered curses. Wozniak slaps Lindstrom on the back with a wolfish grin. Looks like we got a hustler in our midst, fems and chums. Lindstrom's staring out the window, eyes clouded once more, rubbing the place where his tattoo used to be. Yeah, the kid sighs. She taught me that, too. Wozniak suddenly tenses, pressing the earbud of his comms unit tighter to his head. He glances up at Oshiro, pupils dilating. Sarge, you hearing this? Oshiro nods, cupping her own earbud, the soft squawk of the alert transmission she's receiving barely audible. Alarms start ringing in the barracks, an ear-splitting wail spilling across the campus of McCaffrey Tech. The soldiers immediately tense, Markham reaching for his weapon. Oshiro rises with a scowl. Suit up, Pounders! We're rolling out! Lindstrom blinks in confusion, while his other squaddies rise as one and hustle for the door. Game forgotten. Laughter forgotten. Everything forgotten. Move your ass, Cherry! Oshiro barks. What happened? He asks. The sergeant shakes her head, her expression grim. Trouble at the mine.
Briefing note. Note revised projection on Magellan timeline. Marcus Carter laid down his life to buy the colony 5 more days.
Mobile jump platform Magellan will be operational in 17 days, 11 hours, 42 minutes, 83.5% hermium required to jump.
Briefing note. chat logs from a wireless Black Hat network set up by Alla Malakova, a.k.a. Pouchuk, a.k.a. Little Spider, leeching off the Mao's emergency transmission system and held together with electronic prayers and bubblegum.
Palmpad IM, D2D Network. Participants, Nick Malakov, Alla Malakova, Pouchuk. Date, 08-1875. Timestamp, 10:33 hours.
等没有什么动静啊?
Hold up, language file corrupted. Search for dict.est on the centrals. Open the directory and purge everything inside it with digital flame, then replace with what I'm sending you.
Hak agit ut etiam jacket?
Now you're speaking Latin? What the fucking shit?
Quam praeclarus est?
Hold on. Okay, try again. Should be fixed now.
Quid pro quo?
God fucking damn it, why is this not working?
Lorem ipsum maximus buticus.
Wait, that's not real Latin.
Et tu, Brute?
Oh, you motherfucker.
Bah!
F*** you, cuz, this is serious.
Yes, it's working. Your little pirate network is officially up and running. Are you happy now, bitch?
You will forgive me if I do not dance a jaunty fucking jig, given I am currently hooked up to a third-rate life support rig in this shitballs med facility and barely able to breathe. But yes, you may count me among the officially overjoyed.
Oh, good. After all, I have nothing better to do than creep into the server room for you because God knows I haven't seen the inside of enough fucking air vents lately.
Aw, am I cutting into your special time with Queen Donnelly? Bunk space is hard to find, I hear.
Having seen an alternate reality version of you literally die in my arms about 38 hours ago, you think I'd be kinder disposed to you right now. But God, I hate you.
Filthy lies. You love me like cigarettes.
Why the hell you want a secret chat network set up anyway? What's wrong with the main grid?
Probably nothing.
She said unconvincingly.
Been hearing whispers here in Medbay, from the ex-Hypatia crew. Crazy shit, cuz.
Crazier than Geminiv fields and alternate realities and there being infinite versions of me? I mean, how can the multiverse handle that much chill, honestly?
I heard that Katie Femme plugged the AI into the Mao grid, with Captain Bull's permission. So I want to stay off it, okay?
Aiden? Cuz, he helped my ass get back across the wormhole. Helped Hannah, too. Two entire universes would have gone ker-fucking blammo if not for him.
It's not a him, cuz. Never forget that. And I know it helped, but I'd prefer it not be able to read what we say. Okay, thanks.
They might want to drop the dose on those meds they're giving you, cuz. You getting paranoid.
LOL, they got no meds. They got hardly nothing in here. Chief Grant just got out of surgery, and he looks like they stitched him together with duct tape.
It's not like we had much time to pack supplies before we jumped Heimdall. Chief gonna be okay?
Maybe. He in the bed across from me. Looks like hammered sh-
Ain't you a pair?
Blah. So how is Her Majesty doing?
What, you give a shit about Hannah now?
I admit my initial estimation of Ms. Donnelly may have been overly harsh.
I don't know how she is. Spoke to her before and she kind of blew me off. Said she had to go to sleep.
The big come down.
Fighting space pirates and fixing rifts in space-time will take it out of you. Just saying. If I never see the inside of another goddamn air vent, I will die with happy pants.
Not the kind of come down I mean.
Hmm?
She didn't have a moment to breathe when those BT goons were stomping around Heimdall. Now it's all over. Blondie has to actually deal with it.
Deal with what?
They killed her dad, Nick. Right after they killed mine.
Jesus, Ella. I'm sorry. Fuck. With everything that's gone down, I didn't even think of Uncle Mike.
It's okay. I mean, it's really, really not. But you grow up in the House of Knives, you know what it's like to see people die. For a girl whose biggest worry used to be getting a bleeding-edge haircut.
Yeah.
You should talk to her, Nick.
You don't need me to do anything else? Cause I was lying before. I literally have nothing better to do than to help you out. Ugh.
No, your space ninja duties are concluded for the day.
I'm not so good at the talking thing, Els.
You're better than you know. Now run along, you little scamp.
Use those dimples for good for once in your life. BTW, you don't want to get seen, so you'll have to crawl back out through the air vents again.
God, I hate you.